Hello everyone, this is Ash Castlebach, director of Antboy and Antboy Revenge of the Red Fury.
And this is Oscar Dietz, I am Antboy, and you're listening to Comic Book Central.
Where comic books come to life.
Hey there, super dudes and dudettes. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I am your host, Joe Stuber. Thanks so much for stopping by the lair. Another fun ride today. Hey, if you haven't already, be sure to keep up with Comic Book Central online. The online lair is out there in a few places. You can catch up with some of the episodes you might have missed. If you missed a few here and there, if you're a new listener, welcome. Always glad to have new listeners on board. You can go back and catch up on all the past episodes of Comic Book Central at the website comicbookcentral.net. You can go through the archive, check out some of those past conversations that I've had, or you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. There's a link right there on the website. Go back, download those episodes you missed. Go back, and a lot of you are binge listening to the show. You're telling me that, so I appreciate that. You can follow Comic Book Central on Twitter, at comicbookctrl, where you can retweet the show, hashtag share the lair. I really appreciate that. The episode guide, if you want to go back and just take a look at what all is out there, it's over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. So be sure to check all those links out. Really appreciate that. Talk about bringing comic books to life. The biggest thing at the box office this week is Ant-Man. Saw the movie, loved it. It is a fun ride. Marvel has done it once again. Big budget, big box office. But you might not realize that there was a little film with a much smaller budget that was released here in the States a year ago. It's a charming superhero tale called Ant-Boy. Now, if you've never heard of Ant-Boy, no problem. That changes here today. You're going to hear about it today on Comic Book Central because the director of the film and the star of the film, they're going to be joining me in just a few minutes. Now, Ant-Boy is the first live-action superhero film from Denmark. That's right. I'm going international on Comic Book Central today. Hey, why not? The show's been downloaded in 104 countries as of this episode. We definitely have fans in Denmark. Hey to all our fans out there in Denmark. So let's turn the spotlight on this spectacular Nordic country today. The folks behind Ant-Boy have just released the latest film in the franchise, Ant-Boy Revenge of the Red Fury. They're currently working on Ant-Boy 3. You can check out some behind-the-scenes pics and videos on their Facebook page. If you've checked out Ant-Man and you're jonesing for some more anti-goodness, you are in the right place today. Sit back, kick your shoes off. If you're binge listening to the show while you're on your beach vacation, stick your toes in the sand, relax, take a listen to this. I'm going to be right back to chat with Ask Hasselbalch and Oscar Dietz, the director and star of Ant-Boy. The story of Ant-Boy starts as a series of wildly popular children's books written by Danish author Kenneth Andersen. In these tales, Andersen introduces us to 12-year-old Pelle Norman.
That's me, Pelle Norman. A perfectly ordinary 12-year-old. A bit too ordinary, if you ask me. I'm sure many people like being normal, but I'm pretty tired of it. I'm nothing special. I'm not even the nerd everyone teases. At least he gets some attention. I'm just Pelle, a tiny ant in a giant anthill.
Well, Pelle is just your average kid dealing with everything an average kid deals with. School, bullies, trying to win the heart of a fellow classmate. In this case, Amanda. Then one day, a bite from a genetically enhanced ant gives Pelle superpowers. Now, he doesn't shrink down in size like Marvel's version, but he does pack a pint-sized punch. He can climb walls just like a certain web-slinger. And he fuels himself on sugary candy bars. The stories have now been adapted into a successful film franchise. First-time feature director Ask Hasselbalch took the story from page to soundstage, and in the starring role, young Oscar Dietz suited up as Ant-Boy. In the first film of the series, Dietz's character Pelle comes to grips with his newfound superpowers with some help from his comic book-loving friend Wilhelm and Ida, Amanda's sister. This terrific trio springs into action when Amanda is kidnapped by the evil flea, and all sorts of creepy, crawly, comic booky chaos erupts on the screen.
Have you ever longed to be someone else? Someone special?
Where'd he go?
Well, I have.
Good morning.
I won't tell anyone.
What?
That you're a superhero. Let's skip school tomorrow and test your powers. Come on, Pele, jump! A superhero's name must be cool.
Ant Boy.
And you need a costume.
Hey! Hello?
Hi, it's Mom. I need you to pick up...
I can't talk now, Mom.
I'm the flea. Just like the insect, I'm impossible to get rid of.
Isn't your job to help?
Me?
Yeah, you're a superhero. Please save her. I'm coming with you.
It's too dangerous.
Girls ruin everything.
Pissamure.
Who are you?
I am Ant Boy.
The film boasts terrific cinematography and comic book visuals, cool special effects and super stunts, as well as some positive messages for kids. It is fun, it is family friendly, and it is fantastic. And joining me today are the director and the star of Denmark's first live-action superhero film. It's called Ant Boy. Their latest effort is the super sequel Ant Boy Revenge of the Red Fury. A big welcome to director Ask Hasselbalch and the young man who plays Pele Norman, a.k.a. Ant-Boy, Oscar Dietz. Gentlemen, hello. Welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thanks for having us.
Did I get the names right? I got the first thing.
Yeah.
Am I even close?
I think you did a great job.
Okay. At least you know who I'm talking to. So you're both from Copenhagen.
Yeah.
And you're actually in Copenhagen right now, right?
I'm in Copenhagen right now, and it's freezing cold and it's raining, so everything is like back to normal.
Okay, and it's always Copenhagen or Copenhagen. You're from there, so what?
Yeah, Copenhagen.
Copenhagen. Okay, we'll go Copenhagen. Now, I would love to visit there someday. What do I need to know about visiting? What do I need to see? Where do I need to go?
Oscar, go ahead.
Yeah, you should definitely go to Tivoli because it's an amusement park and it's so cool. I really love it. And I actually have a wild card for it, which means that you can get free entrance and like free rides and stuff.
Oh, okay. Is this like that's even beyond like the Disney Fast Pass then, right? You're going in free rides all day then.
Just
let Ant Boy in. Is that the deal? Or who do you have to know to get this deal?
No, it's like kind of just a card that you buy, basically. And you just, it's not like a fast pass, because we don't actually have that in Denmark, because everybody's just equal. Everybody just has to stand in the line.
Everybody is just equal. I love that. Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
I would recommend, like, if it's your first time here, you should just go for a stroll, because we have, like, Denmark is a really old country, so we have castles here. Like real castles.
Oh, okay. Now, I've been to Ireland. We vacationed in Ireland once, and we went to eat dinner in a castle. So
yeah.
I love that experience. So
yeah.
Okay. So take me through. So you're just the bikes, strolling, just lush countryside.
Well, as a tourist, our main attraction is of course Tivoli, and then the Little Mermaid, as you probably know. Hence Christian Andersen, and then we have a place called Christiania, which is basically like a hippie community in Copenhagen. But I think you need to be at least 21 to go there.
Okay. I know there's a few of those here in Columbus, Ohio, too. So, I can imagine that. And football or soccer? Football, obviously.
Football.
You're real football,
yeah.
Who, are you guys both into sports?
I am. Okay. Like soccer, you call it here.
Yep, we do.
I like to watch the team is called FC Copenhagen, which is like kind of Copenhagen's football team, basically.
Okay.
Now
you're in LA now. So are you? What kind of do you like American sport? Do you like to watch American football?
Well, I don't really know very much about it, basically. But I'm going to watch the Dodgers game at Friday.
Nice.
So okay. I'm really looking forward to that.
Is this your first baseball game? Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, so you've never been to a baseball stadium?
No, but my sister bought a hoodie, Dodgers hoodie thing.
Okay.
She really loves it.
All right, so you're getting all the swag. Do you get the baseball cap? Do you get the glove to catch the fly balls and everything? You're all set?
Yeah, I think so.
That's cool. I'm not into sports at all. I'm like a movie nerd. So the closest thing to sport is probably the Academy Awards.
Okay. I love those as well too. And we'll talk a little bit about that because you got an Amboy, because I've read a couple of different interviews where you were referred to as like sort of the onset nerd or the one that was really into comic books and things like that.
Yeah.
You mentioned film. How did you both get involved in film work and television work?
You can start, Isk.
All right. Well, I actually fall into this cliche category of directors wanted to direct like since I was a kid, running around with my dad's 8mm camera doing these really cheap horror short films, like the Super 8 crew. And then basically after high school, I decided I wanted to pursue the dream of directing, and I made a lot of crappy short horror films. And then my journey into film is like, I went to a place called the European Film College, which is located in a part of Denmark called Jutland. And I was there for a year. And then afterwards, I went to the alternative film school here in Copenhagen because I couldn't get into the national film school. And that's a long story short.
No, what was the appeal of horror films for you? Was there something specific, or were there specific films you saw that you're like, oh, that's hitting a nerve right there?
I mean, for me, it's basically, I mean, if you look at like most of my heroes in cinema has done a lot of horror films, or at least tried out to direct horror at some point. And I think the cool thing about horror films in particular is that it's a genre where you can like learn the craft, because there's like some simple rules, and it's a really good genre to try out just movie making in general. So because I wanted to direct like genre films, which is not like a very popular thing here in Denmark, it's mostly like straight dramas. I thought that it was a good way just to start. And then I've always been really fascinated by horror films and monsters in general.
Okay, well, it's our audience. We love comic books, monster, horror, all those different types of things. Oscar, how about yourself? What was the appeal for you? And was there something that you saw at such a young age that just made you say, I want to get into this?
Well, actually, I've been doing theater since I was six. So I remember like kind of seeing a picture in a paper or something and asking my grandma what they were doing. And she signed me up for an audition on a theater called Det Nye Teater in Denmark, which is one of the biggest theaters in Denmark. And the show I signed up for was called The King and I. And I was so lucky that I actually got in.
Good show. you set the bar high.
It's typical Oscar. Every time he goes to a casting, he gets the part. It's pretty annoying, actually.
We talked about that on a recent episode with an actress who was everywhere in the 70s, Pamela Ferdin, who she said when she would go for a part to look around and they're like, oh, Pamela's going to get it. And she did. She got like every role. If you watch 70s television, she was on every television show ever, which is amazing too. Now, Oscar, you were also in Meet Billy Elliot?
Yeah, and because I kind of just, I really wanted to keep doing it. So I did some more auditions and got some more shows, and I got some more experience. And then recently I've done Billy Elliot, which is a very big show, and it has just been a fantastic thing to do, because I was Billy Elliot. And but that's actually before that, I was doing a show called it was called Love Never Dies, and it was just before I got the role as Ant Boy, because all my life I kind of wanted to make a movie as well, because I think it's so interesting. It was actually my godfather. He kind of said, oh, there's an audition for that. You want to go there? And I was kind of, yeah, I really wanted to get into a movie. Maybe I could be like some background person or something. So I just went there anyways.
Wow.
But then I actually ended up being Ant Boy. And now I've made two Ain't Boy movies, and it's just been a fantastic experience.
You went in and got the starring role. That's fantastic. And go ahead.
Joe, sorry, I'm interrupting you. The funny thing was, I was watching a casting tape with Oscar, and the guy doing the casting, he was like, "Can you see who he reminds? I mean, he looks like someone you should probably know." And I was like, "I have no idea." And then suddenly it struck me that Oscar was like a clone of me as a 10-year-old.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we basically look exactly the same.
Okay. And that was, we'll talk a little bit about that when we get into Amboy too, is that I think that was sort of your approach to directing Amboy as well,
from that
10-year-old perspective. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Now, theater experience, movie experience, two different things, Oscar. Which one do you like better? I mean, I know it's probably not a fair question to ask, but being so wildly different, is there a charge you get out of either one?
Well, actually, I get that question a lot, and I thought a lot about it, and just that, as you said, it's two very, very different things. And there's some things that I really like about theater, and also some things that I really like about movies. For instance, about theater, I really like the thing just being there, and there's like a live
well, the reaction. You get that instant
crowd,
reaction.
That you, like, have instant reaction, yeah. And but in movies, it's more like you made the movie, and that's like kind of the fun part there. So like being on the set with all of the people and like kind of enjoying making it without all of the crowd and instant reaction.
Yeah, well, in the theater, you know when something works or doesn't work right away.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, have you ever been in there where either a joke fell flat or a line reading fell flat and you're like, uh-oh. How do you as an actor kind of adjust on the fly like that?
Well, it's just kind of impossible not to, like, ever in your life not miss the point of a joke. Like, kind of, you always make a mistake sometime. And you just gotta, like, look like never, like, nothing went wrong. Like, kind of, they thought, oh, that's all normal. He fell on the floor, but that's a part of the show.
No one like is screaming, cut.
You got to keep going.
What the hell are you doing?
Those crazy directors.
Yeah.
Okay, before we get to Amboy, there's one film I have to ask you about, Oscar. On Comic Book Central, we've talked about this. I talked with Max Charles back in episode 52. He was the voice of Sherman in Mr. Peabody and Sherman. Yeah. You know something about that character, don't you?
Well, yeah, I'm the Danish voice of Sherman.
You're Sherman.
Yeah.
Have you ever met Max Charles?
No, never.
Okay. Now, because that's the thing, too, because Amboy is now over for North America. It's being dubbed into English. So what's that like? Are you watching that performance of the original Max's performance and then kind of adjusting yours to it? Or how do you do that?
Well, actually, I've done a lot of dubbing. So my experience is that you kind of adopt how he talks, and then kind of trying to talk the same way or have some of the same the same ways of pronouncing things, and kind of, and then you gotta follow the mouth lip sync kind of thing.
Okay.
So actually, it's very important to make your language fit their lips. And it's the very hard part of dubbing. So how we did it was actually we went to this it's called a voice test, and they test a lot of voices, and then they kind of pick the one that they think is the most similar to his voice, but also with who's most experienced and like who would they think this would be first doing it with, and all of those kind of things. So. But to learn more about how he talks, and then we kind of just saw some specific scenes from the movie, and we talked about how he did it, and then I tried to do it the same way, basically.
Oh, that's how did they do with Amboy? In your opinion, did they do a pretty good job dubbing Amboy here?
Well, I think they did a pretty good job, because I know for a fact that it has been a very, very hard thing to sync with my mouth, because it's in Danish and they're in English, and it's just not that similar, those two languages.
Yeah, I did. But what's nice about this, and let's get right into it, and a full-blown spoiler alert, we may be talking about some plot points. So if you haven't seen Amboy, yet, you might want to push pause, go watch it. It's available. Tell us, first of all, how people can see this, because it's available on Amazon on DVD, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's on, you can, on demand.
You can watch it on Netflix, you can watch it on demand, iTunes, Amazon, Redbox. It's basically available if you want to watch it.
It's everywhere. I've got a chance to see both of them. You guys were kind enough to give me a preview of the sequel. They're very charming films.
Thank you so much.
They're very charming films. Tell our listeners sort of the genesis of this. These are based on children's books in Denmark.
Yeah, the story of Antboy, or at least how I got to direct Antboy, was that I graduated film school in 2010 and got contacted by Nimbus Film, which is a film company here in Copenhagen that is basically known for dogma films, if you know about the European dogma movement, perhaps Lars von Trier and stuff like that. And there's silence. Like, what are you talking about? No, okay. But at least they contacted me. And then I was actually supposed to direct like a low-budget horror film. It's me again directing something with horror, I know. And I started developing that project. And then I discovered that Nimbus Film had the rights to these books about this young superhero called Antboy. And I read the books, completely fell in love with the tone of the books. But of course, I wanted to change a lot of things because, I mean, it's not books where you can do like a one-to-one adaptation. So what I did was that the first film was basically book number one and book number three put together, combined with like a lot of new ideas that came basically from me and my scriptwriter, Anna Sølholm. I guess the biggest thing we changed was that in the books, Antboy's costume is basically like made out of old Halloween throwaways, and it looks really silly. And of course, it's a lot of fun. But I really wanted to like go all in on the genre, and then do like a really cool costume. Also, because if you're sort of like, I wouldn't call us like low budget, but I mean, we're not Man of Steel or Batman. So
you didn't have $200 million to spend on this?
Well, actually, I think our budget was around the same budget as Man of Steel's coffee budgets. So, looking at that, I think it was very important to go all in on the costumes, at least.
It has a great look to it. I mean, you mentioned about the budget. Of course, you know, you don't have $200 million to throw around.
Yeah,
but
I
one thing that impressed me in watching the films was the level of detail in the costuming, the look of the film, and even some of the special effects I thought were pretty impressive when you're looking at this. So how did you approach – so you had these books. How did you approach making the film? Because I thought it was a unique perspective that you took – in just shooting it.
I looked at like the movies that really inspired me growing up, like Gremlins, for example, Joe Dante's Gremlins, or of course E.T. and stuff like that. And I grew up on Ampling, like the whole Spielberg vibe. And I wanted to make this film like a love letter to myself as a 10-year-old boy. So it was basically, I made this movie for myself. Of course, because of the budget and stuff, I had to come up with like original ideas, and I really used like the whole autumn colors. We shot around September, October of 2012, and I mean the colors here are just beautiful. It's basically like of course a lot of red and a lot of yellow, and I sort of just incorporated that in the whole concept.
I definitely noticed that because there is that fall look to it. I mean, you've got those long shots down the street and the sort of residential areas with the fall colors, and then even in the sequel, you almost, because it is like a little bit of a darker turn and more cold.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're shooting in the winter time, so even the look of that is amazing too. Oscar, how did you get involved with the film?
Well, I actually just went for the casting, really.
So you went in just to be an extra, and then describe the casting process and how, I mean, did you meet with Ask right off the bat, or how did you sort of go through?
Well, it was actually a bit weird because I practiced this like kind of small scene that I got sent with a mail, and then I went in there and I had to like give them my CV and stuff, and then I came in this room with one other guy, I think it was, and then I actually made the scene with him as both characters, and then I went out again and I was actually on my way home, but then I was called back up. And then I did it with three other guys, and Ask was there the second time, actually, also.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I went home after that, and I got a mail, I think, that I was that I was going to the second casting. And after a lot of castings, I was the only Pelly left. But I didn't really know if I had the role left, or it was like a coincidence that I was the only Pelly that day, and then another day. So I actually just kept on doing the castings, and then at one point I was told that I had the role. And then then they told me that it was not for sure that we could make the film. We had to make a teaser and then get some money and get approval that we could do it.
Oh, okay, so you had to sell them the backers on just launching this.
Yeah, exactly, because I mean, sorry I'm interrupting you, Oscar, but the thing is, if you're going to finance a film here in Denmark, it's a whole different system than the studio system. Basically, what you do is you have to have like a TV station abroad, and then you have to have apply the Danish Film Institute, because all the films being produced here in Denmark are basically government funded. So part of applying the Danish Film Institute is that you go through these. I mean, I wouldn't call it like job interviews, but it's basically you have to, you get money to write the script, and then you go into a meeting like analyzing the script and doing your song and dance for the members of the board. And then if you're good at your job, you get the money. And then the thing they sort of requested was, because it was my first feature film, they wanted us to do like a small test film. Also so we could test out the Oscar, but also test out a costume. But because of that, the costume you see in the final film is a lot better than the tests.
But you said it worked.
It was very bad.
It was pretty bad, but at least it was like, I mean, I had to try things out. And what we did during the test was, basically it was Oscar in a costume that had a resemblance of the of the costume from the books, but it was just way off. It was way too silly. So, it was a good reminder of which direction we were going to take the film.
Okay, so what was it about Oscar that convinced you this is Amboy, this is Pelle?
Well, close your eyes, close your ears, Oscar.
Close my eyes.
Close your eyes and ears. And mouth. No, it's basically, I mean, Oscar, I think he was number three or four that came into the casting, and I mean, I think it's like a classic thing. Maybe it's almost like a cliche that you sort of cast yourself as a director if you're casting kids. But okay. I mean, he just had the looks, and also it was it felt very natural to him. It wasn't like a kid actor saying lines. It was just like him being the part. It's really hard to describe, because I mean, usually if you would do a film like Amboy in the States, you would probably go through like around 2,000 or maybe 3,000 kids. But I think we went through around 400 boys, and I knew during the casting that Oscar was the kid I wanted. Hmm. But because it was my first feature, I just had to like play the game and also just cast other boys. But he was just, it just felt right. That's the thing.
Now, Oscar, were you familiar with the books? Were you familiar with the character going into it, or did you have to do a little homework?
No, as a small kid, I actually read the books. I think I read four of the books, or maybe three. And then, so I actually knew the story quite well, but they changed the story a lot, though. But I read the books, and I really enjoyed them just the same as Ask. But I wasn't really thinking about what I would change to make it into a movie. I just enjoyed the story.
Okay, so coming and ask you even when you just even from a perspective of shooting this, you actually shot it from a lower perspective, didn't you?
Yeah, that's true.
Talk a little bit about that and how that adds to the look of the film and what you were going for with that.
Yeah, I mean, basically what we did was I looked at, the old 80s film that it inspired me. And if you look at E.T., it's basically shot from this perspective of Elliot. So that was like a big inspiration, like shoot every scene from the perspective of the main character. So, I mean, the character is never looking down at him unless it's like really like a top shot. Otherwise, you're always like a bit under eye level. And also, my take on Antboy was that he was basically like the normal kid, and the rest of the world was basically insane, which is always a lot of fun because then the audience can sort of relate to the character if he's like the normal kid. But yeah, that's how we shot it. I mean, from the perspective of the main character. Yeah.
And Oscar, what was it like when the first time you put the costume on? Now, you said you had like sort of a trial costume for the promo that you were putting together. But when you've got the full finished money spent on this Antboy costume, you get to be a superhero. What was that like?
I thought it was so cool because it was just like it was a real super superhero costume, and I was actually the one to wear it. But it was a bit tight and was not too comfortable because I actually couldn't move that well in the first movie. But they kind of improved that for the second.
Yeah,
because it wasn't long before you shot both, and I'm guessing it looks like you had a growth spurt even between the two films. Am I correct in that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, so like how many Antboy costumes did you guys have to go through in the course of like a year and a half?
Actually, the first costume we did for the film, we only could afford like one costume. And that cost, no, seriously, it's completely silly. But within our budget, I mean, it was still like the most expensive costume ever produced for a Danish feature.
You're setting all kinds of records for films
exactly.
In Denmark.
Exactly, yeah. And also... for the sequel, it takes place during winter, and because of that, we had to like improve the costume. Also, because we had the experience of the first film with the helmet being a bit too tough on Oscar, and there was just some things that needed to be improved. And during that film, we had two costumes, and they were a bit thicker because it was winter outside. But also, he had gloves in the sequel.
Yes. Now, was it easier? Because Marvel has had Ant-Man in production, because I know Ant-Boy, the character, has been around in these children's books for a while.
Yeah.
But did Marvel's greenlighting Ant-Man make it a little bit easier to make these films? There's superheroes and they're not necessarily the Hulk anymore. We can do these smaller type superheroes.
I guess it goes the other way around. I guess it was Marvel that had, and now they have like an easier job with Ant-Man because of us. No.
Are you saying Ant-Man got greenlit because of you guys? I believe that. I believe that.
No, actually, I have a funny story about Ant-Man. Edgar Wright, who was supposed to direct Ant-Man and was writing the script for, I guess, 5 or 6 years, who was attached to the project at some point, he got a birthday cake a year ago when he turned 40, and it was a birthday cake with an Antboy poster.
Are you serious?
Yeah, saying you can actually look it up on the net if you look up like Antboy cake, and it says "Happy birthday, Edgar. Hope your sequel lives up to the original."
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Okay, now so, obviously you watched the first one. Are there movies that inspired you for this? Because obviously there's the direct connection to Spider-Man, because Ant-Boy gets bitten by a genetically mutated ant. He climbs walls. He's got superpowers. So were there things that inspired both of you that you kind of said, you know what, I want to put like a little homage to Marvel Comics in or something like that, or this is what I like about comic books?
Oscar, do you want to start?
You can start.
All right. I mean, the thing about Antboy is that When we started the project, I of course looked at Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi films, but I saw them and then I put them away because, I mean, we're so close to the whole genre and this is like, it's basically Spider-Man for kids with an ant. And then I knew that instead of like ripping off all these really cool films, I was going to do my own style and looking at films that didn't have superheroes in them, like indie films and of course, Ambling films, and just go for that tone instead. Also, of course, because of budget. So basically, I was inspired by indie films and movies from the 80s, but also because we didn't have like a big budget on both films here. I mean, you just have to work with plot and characters instead of like huge special effects. Of course, I want to blow up stuff. I'm a guy who wasn't.
You get to do a little bit of that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
On a small level,
And I would love to do more, but it basically all the effects are tricked by the story and the characters and the plot.
Well, and that's what I want to ask about too, is because there seems to be this underlying message in the films. Where talk about how you both perceive that, Oscar. You can kind of mention how, because we talk about anti-bullying, we talk about friendship, those types of things. How did you see that as coming to the fore in this movie over superpowers and you know, like you said, blowing stuff up?
One of the focuses on this movie was to make like a superhero movie with special effects and like cool fights between superhero and bad guys. But there was still some scenes that was about bullying and how bad it can be and like how to stop it. And also in the first movie, you see like Wilhelm get bullied by the Terror Twins. And Mark and Alan. But in that movie, you also see how Ant-Boy actually gets his kind of revenge in them. Like, characters have tried to stop it.
I mean, for me personally, it wasn't a big thing. But of course, if you do a film for kids and there's a superhero, I mean, it's basically something you have to dig into. But I think overall, the moral tale of Ant-Boy is about friendship and relying on your friends and having friends in general. That's like the most important message within the Ant-Boy films.
Yeah, and I love the character of Wilhelm. Who's the? I'm drawing a blank on the actor's name.
It's Saint Will.
I love him in this because it's he's kind of like he's this comic book nerd. Is he? Sort of you ask? Is that like your version of it, of him in it? Because he's always talking. He's got his own little Fortress of Solitude. He makes the costume.
I mean, the funny thing is that
they're action figures, not dolls.
Yeah, exactly. No, actually, to be quite honest, he's basically a character we came up with because Ant-Boy couldn't be alone. He needed to have someone to talk to. And,
okay, so he wasn't in the original books.
Well, he has a very small part of the in the books, but he's not like the character you know from the film.
Okay.
And basically, what I thought was really funny was that it's like Pelle, Ant-Boy, of course, is like a regular kid that gets these fantastic powers, but because he has no interest whatsoever in comic books, I mean, he has no idea how to behave and control his powers. And that's the good thing about Wilhelm, because he's basically like a manager type of character. He sort of guides him through the whole superhero mythology and knows everything about comic books. And also, if you look at it, it's quite funny because, if the world was fair, it was supposed to be Wilhelm that had the powers, but it's Ant-Boy.
He even says that. I wish that I would. Exactly. Right. He would know all. The, you know, he's the a cape's not practical.
Exactly. He's like the guy from James Bond with all the gadgets.
That's what I thought. He was Q.
Yeah, exactly.
He's Q in the film, and then Oscar, you even get to say, you know, hey, no cape, no deal.
And also the cool thing with his character is that if you should sort of like analyze Ant-Boy.
Why not? It's Comic Book Central. Let's analyze him.
It's basically Ant-Boy in within the Andor universe, you know that there's a lot of superheroes and comic books and films, but Andor is the only superhero within the movie's universe. Do you know what I'm trying to say? It's basically because we're so close to Spider-Man and all the reference all the time, I think it's very nice to accept that there is superheroes, but it's fiction in our film, except for Rainbow. Does right. it make any sense, or does I sound too European?
No, that makes perfect sense. Okay. I kind of love that, where because you would think that the kid would be so into comic books, and it just he's thinking about girls, and he's thinking about the beautiful girl in class and all these different things.
A dreamer, yeah.
Right? And you get this nerd over here who's like, here's how you do. He has his little checklist. He's got this whole thing out, and it's like if there were a child superhero, this is what we have to do with it. So. No, it makes perfect sense. Hey, Oscar, let's talk a little bit about stunts. Let's talk about some of these action scenes. Did you get to do any of your own stunts in the film?
Yeah, I did a lot of the stunts, actually. In the first movie, I believe I did almost all of them.
Okay, most challenging scene that you shot, stunt-wise?
There was a scene where I stood like on a roof. I don't know if you remember it. But it was like on a.
This is normal... the very beginning. Are you when you're tossing the apple down?
No. This is a very end, actually.
Oh, okay.
Where is it? You remember, right?
It's actually the scene right after the flea escapes from his house. There is a scene with Ida, the love interest, looking up, and she sees like the silhouette of Amber on the roof.
Okay.
And we had to place him there. It's not an effect. He's actually standing up there. Of course, there was wires and stuff.
Okay, I was going to ask, did you have the budget to tether him?
Well, no, but it was just very flexible. I mean, that's basically how he got the part. He's able to climb walls and pee acid in real life.
The special skills on the resume, right?
Yeah.
But it was, I thought it was very scary to stand up there because it was not like the same like kind of safety as when I was climbing a wall, because I was kind of standing up there with the stuntman, a stunt director, like kind of holding me with a wire thing.
Okay.
But like under me, so if I felt he could kind of catch me, but I would still like kind of fall a little bit. And it was very hard to stand there because it was so like small, and I only had the chance to like grab a chimney.
if something went horribly wrong, and I'm sure you were taking your time too, Ask, while shooting the scene, it makes you sure the lighting was right. It's like, get me off of here. Let's talk about some of the wall crawling, because I know there's different techniques obviously that you're using for them. So talk a little bit about how you shot the wall crawling scenes and some of the challenges involved in that, because they look great.
Thanks. I mean, basically, this in both films, Andor climbs walls. The first film was really analog in the sense that Oscar is actually climbing all the walls, and then it was like wire removal.
So some of them you're hoisting them up.
Yeah.
Actually, we are in all the shots.
In
the first film. Yeah.
Oh, you went old school.
Yeah,
but luckily I'm not scared of heights, because I was like 30 meters up in the air or something.
Oh, you went old school, like the Spider-Man TV show back in the 70s.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Also, I mean, I have a thing for practical effects. I would love to like prefer to do it all practical, but of course, I mean, we're not able to. There's just too much stuff going on. But for the sequel, there's a climbing scene where Amber climbs like this... really tall building, that was basically shot in a green screen studio with a fake wall, and then we added him later with CGI.
Yeah, I mean, the scenes look great, and again, talking about stunts, let's talk about the fight scene with the gym teacher. This may be going back a little too far for you, Oscar, but ask, were you inspired by the Star Trek episode of Mock Time?
No, I'm not a sci-fi nerd.
Okay, because it looks an awful lot. You've got the little...
No, seriously.
Yeah, when Kirk and Spock go at each other?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if you... I mean, obviously, they Cable Guy, they did they spoofed that. So I thought maybe you might have been inspired by that.
No, it's basically inspired by, like, Danish, old Danish children films. They okay. always have like a lot of silly scenes with the kids beating up adults. Grown up, sorry. Yeah.
No, it looks. I mean, it looks fantastic on this. Oh, talk you. About the character development. You've got the main characters there, and they're sort of forming this team coming together. Yeah. I'm guessing that's probably Oscar your most your favorite moments in the film is just you know being able to interact with the other actors as opposed to just hanging from wires and things.
Yeah, the thing I like about movies is actually playing the scenes, not mostly the stunts. It's more like doing scenes with the other actors and like. I bet a lot of people would actually think that my favorite thing would be the stunts, but I'm more like kind of the guy who wants to play the scenes, like which is the acting part, basically.
Do you have a favorite scene in either film?
Well, it's almost 3 years ago we made the first movie, so it's kind of hard to remember.
Yeah. Hey, well, most of the things I'm asking about go back 40 years, so let's hope we can remember within three. Are there like a certain things or certain moments that the two of you shared on set? Because Ask, you mentioned that Oscar is almost like a reflection of you. Is there a favorite moment you have of working with Oscar, like something that happened on set that was just like, you're going to take that with you forever?
I mean, my biggest job directing these films is, of course, putting it all together. And part of putting it all together is to create an environment where it's okay. If you're sad, you're free to cry. If you want to poke fun of something, just do it. I mean, it's basically the job of any director to create an environment you can work within. And I think that, or hopefully, I achieved to create an environment where Oscar is relaxed and happy of working and acting. Do you know what I'm trying to say? That's basically my job. But coming up with like a situation, I mean, there's so many situations. And I think overall we have a lot of fun doing these films. But they're also really tough because we're on a really tight schedule.
Well, I'm going to guess you created a great atmosphere because Ant Boy 3 is in production, correct?
It is, yeah.
This is great because we got the series of books. I'm not familiar with the books, obviously. I don't know if any of them have been translated in English, have they?
Yeah, the first one came out in the States, actually. Yeah.
Okay, so we got that. We've got the villains. We've got the Flea, the Terror Twins. I love that nobody dies in these films, too. And I think it's the first superhero film I've seen where somebody got pantsed.
Yeah.
So they're very family friendly. There's a lot going on. We've got the Red Fury. What can we expect from Ant Boy 3?
Well, I'm not going to spoil it, but basically...
Whole film. Give us the ending.
You have to wait. I mean, you have to do an interview with me like 6 months from now. Then I'm going to spoil everything.
All right.
But it's...
More superheroes? Do we've got more the team coming together?
I mean, the fun thing for me as a director doing these Ant Boy films is that I want to make them totally different. I mean, every film has to be different. And with the sequel, we went pretty dark, I guess, and it was more about the suspense. The first film was very much about the whole discovery of him being a superhero and what lay there. And the sequel was basically like Batman Returns. It was dark. It had a female villain and all these things. And I think the third film is basically coming back to the whole friendship theme. And I'm going to combine it with the charm and the humor from the first film. And basically, it's going to be the first film on steroids.
Is Wilhelm going to get a costume?
Maybe. Maybe not.
Give him a mask or something.
Yeah.
Throw the poor guy a bone.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the plan is also because, I mean, Oscar and the other actors are growing. Of course, because I think, Oscar, you're 14 now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to turn 15 while we're filming.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we only have one shot left, and then Ant Boy is over. And then, I mean, it's a trilogy, and it's the first superhero trilogy of Denmark coming out of Europe, actually aiming at kids. And it's going to be totally different from the two other films. But it's also going to be an Ant Boy film. That is basically what you can expect.
How can people check these films out? We talked about the first one. The second one premiered as of this airing. It's July 3rd.
Yeah,
in theaters. True. Let's see if I got this right. You guys are going to be in St. Louis, Phoenix, Yeah. Dallas, Texas. Cleveland, Ohio. Hello. My stomping. You're very near to me. I might have to run down and check it out, too. Minneapolis, Ohio. Minnesota. Ohio. Yeah, you're going to be there. So that'll be the premiere. And then on DVD,
yeah,
August 4th, and yeah. Video on demand.
Exactly.
So yeah. We've got all these. How can people find out more? Facebook? You got websites? Where are you guys at?
I mean, Oscar, go ahead.
Yeah, if you just can't wait to figure out something about the third movie or maybe some behind-the-scenes kind of inserted information things, you can actually go follow me on by my name Oscar Dietz on Instagram or on my site on Facebook, also called Oscar Dietz. And I will post some pictures about what we're doing on the set and like kind of maybe a picture of the Aimboy costume and like things like that.
Oh, okay. A little behind the scenes action. People can kind of check out during production.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. And ask, where are you?
I have a fan page on Facebook, so click like if you like me.
You'll pop in every now and again?
Yeah, exactly, and there's going to be stuff there as well. But, I mean, just Google Amber. I mean, this movie and of course, the first Amber movie was sold to 80 countries now, so it's a pretty big franchise. And it's
and so award-winning, correct?
Yeah, exactly. We won two Academy Awards here in Denmark for both films.
Congratulations to both of you and to the crew, to the cast and crew. They're fun. They're fun films. It's a very cool concept for a series. It's very nice to see some live action superheroics that are family friendly, that have a positive message for kids today, that are fun. Yeah. The effects are really cool. And I want to thank both of you for joining me today on Comic Book Central. Oscar, don't eat too many candy bars, bud.
Thank you, Joe.
I can't promise. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Joe. Great talking to you. All right,
bye.
Take care.
I'm going to post the links we mentioned over in the show notes at my website, comicbookcentral.net. There you can check out the websites and social network links for Ask, Oscar, and Ant Boy. It is a fun series, folks. Take my word for it. It's pretty cool. I can't wait for part 3. As I mentioned earlier, they're posting some fun videos and some cool behind-the-scenes pics. Oscar had mentioned that. He's posting some stuff out there. So you're going to want to check those out. My thanks to both Ask and Oscar for joining me on the show today. Folks, we are just weeks away from Connecticut Comic Con. I am going to be there. I'm taking Comic Book Central on the road once again. The convention takes place August 14th through the 16th at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. New place, a new facility for the folks over at Connecticut Comic Con. My guest from last week's episode of Comic Book Central, Adrian Pazdar, the voice of Iron Man in the Marvel Universe, Glenn Talbot from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Nathan Petrelli from Heroes. He's going to be there along with his co-star from Heroes, Greg Grunberg. Greg can also be seen in the upcoming Heroes Reborn and a small independent film called Star Wars The Force Awakens. He's going to be in that. Adrian, Greg, the rest of their rock and roll band from TV, they're going to be playing live Friday night at the convention. Then on Saturday, yours truly is going to be hosting two panels. First panel is with the Scarlet Speedster himself from the original Flash TV series and the current Flash TV series, John Wesley Shipp. I'm going to be moderating his Q&A, so if you happen to be there at the convention, make sure you're in that room, in that panel, in that Q&A. Be sure to have your questions on your flash cards ready. The second panel, it's the voice of Batman in the DC Animated Universe, Kevin Conroy. You might remember he was my guest back on episode 21 of Comic Book Central, so check that out. I'm going to be meeting up with him again. We're going to be talking about the latest and greatest in the DC Animated Universe, and we're going to be joined by the head of DC Animation, the man who helped mastermind the death and return of Superman back in the 90s, the great Mike Carlin. He's going to be there. That's going to be a fun panel. John Wesley Shipp is going to be a great panel. We're going to have some fun at Connecticut Comic Con. I hope to see you there. So much fun is going to be had at that convention. Take a listen to this and find out more.
Make it a super weekend when Connecticut Comic Con hits the luxurious Mohegan Sun Casino Hotel in Uncasville, Connecticut, this August 14 to 16. Meet the Temple of Doom and Goonies star Ki-Hai Kwan in an ultra-rare con appearance. Catch up with the Flash's John Wesley Shipp, Heroes and the Force Awakens star Greg Grunberg, and the voice of Batman himself, Kevin Conroy. Talk with comic book legends including Roy Thomas, Neil Adams, Mike Zeck, and Walt Simonson, plus comic book dealers, toys, arts, pop culture, and lots more. Enter the cosplay contest or listen to live music from fan favorites High Adventure and Kiss Forever. Tickets on sale now for only $25, with kids 8 and under free, and so is the parking. Learn more at ctcomiccon.com.
Connecticut Comic Con,
this August 14 to 16.
Be there!
If you want to hear how much fun you can have at Connecticut Comic Con, be sure to check out episodes 40 and 41 of Comic Book Central. That's where I brought you a bunch of conversations from the convention. Two-parter, you're going to love it. Max Hernandez from Captain America Winter Soldier. Ray Park, Darth Maul from Star Wars Episode 1. William Catt, you can hear my Q&A panel with the greatest American hero himself. Also, legendary talents from the pages of the comics, Neil Adams, Jerry Ordway. Check those episodes out on the website, comicbookcentral.net. Again, you can subscribe to the show in iTunes. You get them that way. If you're in iTunes, take a minute. I really appreciate it if you leave a review in iTunes. That always helps. Share the lair by telling your friends and family about the show. If you've got some folks that love comic books, that love comic books brought to life, tell them about Comic Book Central. You can help get the word out by retweeting the show on Twitter. Thanks so much to everybody that's been doing that. It's at ComicBookCTRL, hashtag share the lair. You can share the links on Facebook when they're up on Saturdays, facebook.com/ComicBookCentralNetwork. And you can tell me what you think about the show. Write in. Tell me what you think. I'd love to hear from listeners. joe@comicbookcentral.net. Speaking of getting the word out about the show, again, thanks to everyone who's been doing that. Big thanks to Dan, the art man. He was nice enough to run the Comic Book Central promo on his show. Dan, I'm going to return the favor, my friend.
Dan, the art man's book reviews, a podcast where I share my book reviews with you. I go about my reviews a little different. I try not to, like, summarize the book. I just kind of try and tell you how I felt about the book, why I liked it, why I didn't, and that's about it. Mostly, I read sci-fi and fantasy, but I also try and read broadly Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, 11/22/63 by Stephen King. DanTheArtMan.com.
All right, folks, time to wrap things up for another week. All this talk about ants has me thinking of picnics. I'm getting hungry. I think I'm going to head out, enjoy the day, pack up a few Sammies and drinks in the picnic basket, take Stuber Girl out for a date. But as all superheroes do, I shall return, because next week on Comic Book Central,
fire friends, go for it!
That is right. I'm going to be going back to the 80s for a look at one of the coolest cartoons of all time, from Spider-Man and his amazing friends, the woman who gave us the first appearance of Angelica Jones, a.k.a. Firestar. You also know her from the classic TV series Family Affair. Actress Kathy Garver will heat things up here in the lair next week. Until then, have an antastic week. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Unported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Sail away.